kind of podcast is this?
Welcome to Rapid Fire Chat,
a podcast where we'll be interviewing devs and getting to know them beyond the screen.
I'm Justin, front-end developer from San Antonio.
And I'm Laura, a full-stack developer also in San Antonio. For today's guest, we have Andre Koenig, if you want to... Am I saying that right,
yeah.
Andre?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Andre is a...
My official title is integrations engineer.
I would have just said developer.
Yeah, that's okay. Integrations developer.
Cool. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I recently moved to San Antonio. I still work for my old company in DC remotely. I'm a self-taught developer who switched careers 3.5 years ago. My previous career was in hospitality. I was a hotel manager for almost 12 years.
Very cool. Do you see a lot of overlap between like hotel management and developing?
Nothing? Yeah, there's definitely soft skills that are relevant that I think helped me find a job and switch careers. Dealing with irate customers helped a lot in dealing with customer service representatives in both companies I worked for, and kind of understanding their perspective because they're the ones who are client facing. So I kind of understand their daily struggles of, you know, pleasing the customer.
Makes sense. It's pretty cool.
All right. Are you ready for some questions?
Sure.
All right. What is the most unprofessional thing you've done?
I'm trying to think of something like really bad. Like work-related, the most unprofessional thing I've done multiple times would be to commit API keys and passwords to Git and push it.
Oh.
Which is not ideal. Most of the time, though, it's like usually sandbox credentials. One time, I think they were client credentials. Even though, you know, they're private repos, it's still not best practice, obviously, because,
right.
You know, that can be compromised. But
right.
So that's pretty bad. And I know I shouldn't be doing that, but like sometimes you just like forget. Because
and in the rush of it, too. Like,
yeah,
I want to get this out. I want to get this out.
It's not even that. It's like I work on a lot of integrations. So I develop for third-party APIs and things like that. So when I develop, it's a lot easier to just throw like an API key right in the code just to get something going and running and testing things. And then you just like forget it's there, you know, 150 lines up, like my API key is there before I like them. And it's like, oh, it works. I better commit it so I don't like lose this spot. And then the API key is there. And then, you know, you push it later and somebody comments on a PR. It's like, should this be here? Like,
I've definitely done that way too many times. And people are always like, hey, your API key is out there. And I'm like,
yeah, if it's like sandbox keys or demo keys, it's not a big deal. But if it's customer credentials, it's usually pretty bad. Or, you know, your organization credentials. Because if any company, if it gets like successful and it has funding or whatever, it will get hacked or attempt to get hacked. It's not a matter of if and it's when. So you'll be targeted at some point. So having good security practices is usually good. You know, I broke like master builds a bunch of times, but that's just like... And that's just day-to-day work.
So a developing type question. What's your secret code pet peeve?
Bad commit messages kind of drive me crazy. And
like what's the worst?
Fixed stuff or, you know, or like some cuss word or whatever. Or like try again or just random things that tell me nothing about what's going on at this commit. And that, I see those like all the time at work in production, people who've been doing it for like decades. I don't know, it's just kind of maybe it's like early on I watched this conference talk about good commit messages. It's kind of a famous one. It has like a ton of views on YouTube. But anyway, it was the guy going through like bad commit messages. It's hilarious, but it's pretty true. And I don't know, it's just like weird things when people leave like white space or double empty spaces and things like that. Just more of like a style thing.
Yeah.
What's a body part you wouldn't mind losing?
Oh, jeez. What kind of podcast is this? A body part? I mean, would a finger count? Is that a body part?
Sure.
I guess. Like, if I had to, right. I would lose, like, a toe or something. I feel like that wouldn't affect too many things. Although it would affect a little bit of stability, but... I mean, yeah.
It'd just be like walking around drunk all the time. Just a little bit. Maybe. A little bit uneasy.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It'd be a secret thing, too, so that...
Right, and you can pass off as a normal human, mm-hmm. too, if you need to.
Yeah, but then, like, when you get... in a relationship with someone or yeah. something.
It's
like,
just keep the
there's
song.
There's this little...
That's why they call them business socks. yeah. I mean, everything else I feel like would be way too impactful of day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, you know, you get used to everything. But I wouldn't voluntarily do any of that stuff.
Yeah, I think I think that's something interesting that we all get used to. Like something that we feel like we would never, you know, like something happens to you or something changes and you feel like, oh, this is going to be such a life changing mm-hmm. thing. But then like eventually it becomes your new normal.
And yeah. I mean, I would give it up for like a superpower or something, maybe. A toe?
Oh, yeah.
What superpower
depending
would you
on what
get?
It is. I don't know. It would be cool to like read minds, although there's a lot of complication there, but...
You have to be able to turn it off. I think that's the big key to that superpower.
Right.
Because if you
can
always...
Yeah, it needs to be selective. Yeah. Selective. So I would be really good at playing poker if I could do that.
Would you consider that cheating, though?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
But you're just stealing
But you need any edge in poker that you can. Yeah. I played poker professionally for like a year, so for some reason that's like where my mind went first.
Whoa.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was more of out of a necessity than anything. So when I came to United States, there was a limbo between you going from a visa to like a green card. And there's like a limbo of like 3-4 months where you're waiting on like your work permit, work authorization type thing and some paperwork. So legally you can't really work. Mm. And I didn't want to like do anything to like jeopardize anything potentially. So, and that was like 2003-04 after the poker kind of started getting popularity after Chris Moneymaker won the World Series. So I was playing like a lot online for fun. And then I was like, well, maybe I can just kind of do it full time. So
it seems like a good fit, like a programmer's mind. And
I wasn't a programmer at the time.
But you have that mind.
But the mind.
Oh, sure. I think like a programmer's mind can be taught. Like I'm not very... I don't have a background in like electrical engineering or mm-hmm. like I never was good at math or whatever. So that was like one of my reservations. Like, well, can I do it? I'm more of like the right brain mm-hmm. type person. And I was like, I don't know if like it's my thing. But then you realize the math you have to do as a programmer is like fourth grade level.
Right.
It's like, oh, if as long as I can increment this thing by one every single time, it's usually fine. So, math-wise, unless you get into some, I don't know, maybe something else, it's pretty straightforward. Maybe like data science where you need actual more math, but for your day-to-day web development or something.
A lot of that stuff's Googleable, you know? Mm-hmm. Like even the math problems. Like it's usually a math problem that someone else has already solved.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, or even data science, there's probably like a library for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the same way. That was one of my reservations too. And then finally, I feel like now... the math just kind of like sneaks into my programming. Mm. Not that I needed to sneak math into, you know, like it worked the other way around.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what would you rather go to, a club, house party, or a small group get together?
Yeah. A small group get together. I don't know. It's like maybe because I'm older, you know, I want to be in bed at a reasonable hour. I mean, I do fine in like large social situations, but like club thing is definitely not for me. I haven't been to a club in a while. And I'm more, you know, stay at home, paint some miniatures, mm-hmm. hang out with some friends. Yeah.
Did you used to go clubbing? Like, was that an activity you would partake in?
Yeah, when I was like in university, I would. But again, it was mostly with like close friends and we would just like kind of hang out and do drinking and stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so what caused your biggest burnout from programming? Like the first burnout where you were just like, I'm done, I don't want to touch anything.
If I don't count initially when I was trying to teach myself programming using a Windows Vista laptop, I almost quit before I even started because I couldn't get Ruby installed. I couldn't get Rails going. The command line was all weird. Every single tutorial online was not like applicable. It was a nightmare. And then I got a Mac and everything was like super butter smooth as far as to install local stuff to learn. I think my biggest burnout was actually when I was still teaching myself programming. I can't remember what it was. I think I was doing Hartle tutorial on Rails, which is a very popular tutorial on Rails. Michael Hartle is the author. And I just could not get one thing. I was getting this error. I just couldn't do it. I was just stuck on it for like 2 days. I came home one day and I told my wife, like, I'm done. I can't do it. I'm done. And then she was like, well, just, you know, take a break and then just like try tomorrow. Just like don't think about it at all for like a day and then go back to it. And yeah, and I did and it just worked. I don't know. I did something and I guess like you have a clear mind. And, so that was kind of a big one. I was to the point where I wanted to give up. And I didn't have any really a lot of guidance because I was teaching myself. So I would get, I had a career coach guy who was helping me switch, but he didn't help me a lot with like actual programming part. So my one like disposable one-time teachers that I would have would be like somebody at a meetup for like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So I would usually save up some questions from whatever I was working on and then go to like this little hackathon meetups and grab somebody and be like, help me with all of this. Mm-hmm. And usually, yeah, people, Ruby community especially, everybody's like super helpful and they're always willing to like look at stuff.
That's what I've been so surprised about learning to code. I feel like everyone's so helpful. I mean, of course, depending on the environment, but I would do the same. I would go to all these meetups and ask for help and everybody was willing to help. Everybody was sending me different resources. Mm-hmm. Like I just find this community both in person and like online so supportive.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not Call of Duty Reddit for sure. It's to just get good is the answer usually.
Yeah, I think it's a misconception that a lot of people getting into it feel is going to happen is that the community is not going to be there to support you. But
yeah, it can take a while. I mean, you do need to find good community and like finding a mentor is really important. Mm-hmm. Even if it's for a short term or long term, I would say probably if you're like trying to break into the field, coming out of the boot camp or whatever, it would be a huge what's the word I'm looking for, like factor in your success if you have like a mentor who can help you with programming, but more importantly just help you navigate the industry. Yeah. You know, how to like apply for jobs, interviews, what's important, what's not important. A lot of people get really focused on like learning all the programming and it's not really gonna help as far as job search goes and switching careers.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that kind of fall between the cracks when you're learning to code. Like it's, I don't know if you guys have found this, but like there's a lot of technical stuff and it goes by the books and there's just a lot of little things that you're not gonna find on YouTube videos or books or I don't know. I think it's connecting with people that make the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean academic like programming like from code tutorials or like books is very different from like production type work, so that can't really prepare you for that. You know, it's very different. Like mostly you just Google everything, but you really need to understand like what you're Googling and some implications that will happen like in production.
Yeah. You're talking about when you're actually producing too. You're Googling all day, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's... I think that's another misconception is that people think, oh, I need to know everything before, you know, I'm a good programmer. But it's really knowing what the question that you need answered is.
Yeah. It's more importantly to know what you don't know.
Right.
So you can Google stuff correctly. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what you don't know, then it gets really hard. Then you're kind of stuck because you don't know what to even get started at. But that's also why mentorship is really important, because it's extremely inspiring for like a junior developer or somebody who is just starting to learn. You know, because you would think of the senior developers as just gods who know everything, and then you go up to them asking a question and they're like, I have no idea, and you just watch them google it and you're like, okay, so that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what's it called, affirming to see them Google something. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh well, if they can do it.
Mm-hmm. And usually if I have a question, now I would do it first, but if you're stuck on something, the first thing you need to do is just like Google it, and then when you're totally stuck, then you go, because that's the first thing they're gonna do. So you wanna be like, oh, I looked at this Stack Overflow, I looked at this GitHub mm-hmm. issue, this didn't work, and
right.
so you can kind of, you know, do the steps they would have done if they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming on the podcast. It was fun. I hope you had a blast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a privilege. I mean, most people, or all people, according to Dale Carnegie, love talking about themselves. So it was, having all the attention was, never mind, cut that. I can't think of the ending of that.
It's good. We enjoyed your stories.
Thanks for all the questions.
That was quick.
Yeah.
It felt easy. I think we're good.
Okay. Tune in Thursday for Andre's story about his career change from hotel manager to software developer.
There's bed bugs and bed bug sniffing dogs.
Once upon a time, I was born in Soviet Union. It was bleak times.
The big question is, will he ever get out?